From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Have you ever watched reality TV and seen someone just go absolutely nuts, just yelling and screaming at someone, like throwing things, and thought to yourself, what is happening in this person's head right now? Like, how do they do that? Because I don't know about you, but me, I don't know how to yell at people. I never yell at people. I certainly couldn't do it on a camera. It would just feel uncomfortable. I'd feel bad about it. So how does someone get themselves to the point where they're able to do that? I had a really interesting conversation about this recently, and I promise this is business related. There is a wonderful business lesson in this, and it's not just don't yell at people. And that conversation was with a guy named John Taffer. Maybe you know the name. You've probably seen his show. He has a show on TV called Bar Rescue, in which John goes into restaurants and bars that are struggling and then helps their owners fix them. And one of the ways that he does that is by yelling a lot like this.
You then hold it in your hands, look at it, and say to yourself, this isn't right, correct? And then you brought it out anyway.
That's some good yelling. And in fact, towards the end of this segment, there's even throwing of food.
That is unacceptable. Clean up your...
All right. I've known John Taffer for years in person. He is not a yelling, screaming, crazy person. That is just on TV. And he told me this super, super interesting thing recently.
I've never thrown food at anybody in my personal life or embarrassed a man in front of his wife or vice versa or any of those. So first couple of times I did that on TV was horrifying, scary. But I didn't do it for the camera. I did it because I was in a jam. I couldn't save this guy in 4 days if he didn't freaking listen to me.
Because as a consultant, John could spend a month or more with a company trying to turn it around. But when he's filming an episode of Bar Rescue, he only has 4 days, which means that he's got to get to people really fast. And he found that just the normal ways of talking didn't really work in that compressed amount of time. So he had to become two people. There's John. This is the way that he thinks of it. There's John, the normal professional, the guy I know. And then on TV, there's Taffer.
Taffer, in many ways, is unwavering, close-minded, aggressive. Do it my way or hit the highway. I don't have the time to talk about it. But you know why. We've been that. I'm taking 30 days of work and compressing it into 4 days, so I don't have the time. There's a reason why.
John described this to me as a dynamic change to his personality. That over time, as he was filming Bar Rescue, and by the way, it is approaching, or maybe has just hit, depending on when you're listening to this, its 250th episode, which is wild. John found that in filming this show, he had to transform. He went from just John to John and Taffer, because Taffer was the guy who could get people to listen to him in 4 days. Taffer was the guy who made things move faster. And as he was saying to me, he was like, look, if you had to write something for Entrepreneur Magazine in 20 minutes that usually took you 2 days, you would have to rethink the way in which you do things to make it work. And when he said that, this light bulb moment happened for me. I felt like, oh my God, I understand something about the way in which people change. As leaders, as workers. And so here's what I told him. What you're saying there reminds me in a strange tangential way, so stay with me, it really will come back to you, to something that John Mackey, the co-founder and longtime CEO of Whole Foods, recently told me. He said that the reason why he believes he was a successful leader for as long as he was because the question that he kept asking was, what does the company need from me? And then he needed to be willing to reinvent himself to meet whatever the needs of the company were. He says leaders often have too firm an idea of who they are and what their value is. And so they'll hold on to something long past when it's useful for the company. And the reason I'm telling you that is because I'm just thinking back to you explaining how that character of Taffer on the show came to be, and the way that you act on the show is different from you are in real life, and how uncomfortable that was at first. But the reason you just told me was because you were finding in this concentrated amount of time, the way to get things done, the way to get someone to listen to you was to start acting differently. You functionally asked yourself, this is an observation, but I ask you to confirm or deny it, but yeah. From what I'm hearing, it seemed like what you did was you asked yourself, what does this situation need me to be? And the answer to that is what you became. And that turned out to work. What do you think about that?
I think that quite might be, in 13 years of interviews, one of the most insightful questions and statements that's ever been said to me. And nobody's ever said anything like that to me. And the fact that it came from you doesn't surprise me at all.
Oh, flattery. I appreciate that, John. I will take it. What followed from this exchange was just a really fascinating conversation about management and about business and about the way that we have to transform ourselves to fit the needs of the things that we're building or running. And that is the conversation that I want to play for you today on Problem Solvers. It is technically in honor of John Taffer's 250th episode of Bar Rescue, but it's not just about John. It's about you. It's about me. It's about anyone building anything and who and what we have to become to truly succeed with it. Coming up after the break. We all want the best of both. Dessert without calories, luxury without expense. And how about security without passwords? With Okta, it's possible. Okta secures identity for your business so you can safely use any technology. You can build experiences that are richer and more secure, grow revenue without running up costs, and scale easily no matter your tech stack. Enjoying the best of both? It's possible. It's Okta. Okta, the world's identity company. To learn more, visit okta.com. All right, we're back. I'm talking with John Taffer, host of the great television show Bar Rescue, which is hitting its 250th episode. Totally crazy. And before the break, we were talking about how John had to adjust his personality and his working style to meet the demands of the show and the filming schedule. He couldn't just be relaxed, thoughtful John. He had to become this other person, this Taffer. And how necessary, in fact, that is for all of us in our own ways. Doesn't matter if there's no television crew around. We always have constraints. And to be successful leaders and managers, we have to figure out how to transform and fill and succeed within those constraints. And I'll pick it up from there with John.
So that's fascinating. Because let me take that a step deeper. I've identified that there are different ways to change behavior. I can do it through pride, right? I can appeal to pride and pump you up and get you to change. I can appeal to fear. I can appeal to your heart, your kids, your wife. I know how much they mean to you. So if your actions are going to change how much they respect you, you're probably going to take that action.
So
I never thought about that way before. So I've never talked about this with anyone. It's exciting to even talk about it.
Thank you.
I'm put in a situation. I'm told I got to change this guy's behavior in 4 days. He's going to lose his house. He has 2 young kids. His wife is in a corner hysterical crying. This is real shit, man. This guy's counting on me. This isn't TV, man. This is real to me. The cameras happen to be there. Right. So how do I motivate this guy? So I try pride, screaming at him. What's going to happen when you fail? What are your neighbors going to say when you tell them, oh, I had to close the place? I try, doesn't work. So now I try fear. What happens when you lose your house? Where the hell are you going to put your kids to sleep? I try that approach. It doesn't work. So he drinks. I put a picture of his kids on the bottom of his glass. So every time he picks it up, he's staring at his kid in the bottom of the glass. I think you probably saw that episode.
Yeah.
How do I crack through? If I got to throw food at him, I will. It evolved to throwing that food. Man, it is so insightful what you said, Jason. I never thought of it that way. I'm successful in Bar Rescue in those 4 days, and I am, because I modified my behavior to that situation to make that work. And I would never behave that way in a normal situation. That's fascinating when you look at it that way. And it goes to show when we talk about, and even in my book, Don't BS Yourself, I talk about the excuses that we use. And you and I had this discussion years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and one of those discussion points that we have is fear. Mm-hmm. And you know, and excuses and all of those things. Well, you have to get past the fear to be able to do that to somebody.
Yeah,
it's scary. You sure do. And as a manager in a corporate environment, we have the same moments. The first time you fire someone, the first time you look at somebody and say, I'm sorry, I'm passing you up on a promotion, mm-hmm. or you deny a raise, or any of those types of things. It takes courage to attack those situations. And candidly, where people fail as a TV host is when they don't have courage. And when people fail as managers, more often than not, I think it's because of courage more than ability. That's pretty deep, isn't it?
It is. And I love the line that you just drew from being a TV host to being a manager, because the thing that we're describing is this. I hadn't thought of it until you just said it, but is also the same. The way someone is as a manager isn't the way that they are at home. It isn't they're not bringing their full sense of self to being a manager. They're thinking, what does this situation need from me as a manager? What does this team need from me as a manager? What does this company need from me as a manager? I need to evolve into that role, which is a part of you, right? There's a part of you that is the character of Taffer on the show, but it's also custom built for that situation and for that need. And if a manager doesn't realize that, then they're always going to be timid and afraid. And they're always going to think, I don't know how to do this because it's not something that I do in home and or other parts of my life. And that's not relevant. That's not a relevant question. The question isn't, do you not know how to do it? The question is, can you learn how to do it?
And do you have the courage?
And do you have
to challenge somebody to their face and be mm-hmm. honest with them? You know, you do, I do, because we've learned how to be leaders. The first time you did that, buddy, it wasn't so easy, was it?
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. That's a powerful conversation. What else I find today is this conversation might have been different pre-pandemic too, because I think the human resource, that whole employee environment has changed post-pandemic as well. Quality of life has become almost more important than quality of career. With a lot of people, there's been a lot of shifts post-pandemic, which I think has changed into what we just said even more.
I'd just love you to unpack that a little bit more. Do you think that it's harder to be a manager post-pandemic? Do you think it's harder to grow into the role that is necessary of you post-pandemic? Where do you see that challenge being?
I think it's harder to be a manager post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. I think that employees are very hung up on quality of life these days. In an interview, the first thing they'll tell you is, I need 3 days off a week. That's the way there are far more conditions put forth by the interviewee than the interviewer these days. That's a real shift in the dichotomy of the workplace.
Yeah.
I also find, and we've touched upon this over the years, I think, but this relevancy thing is really on social media. People post a picture. I could post the ugliest picture of me ever posted, put it online, and somebody's going to say, looking great today, John.
Yeah.
Fake gratification. And it comes instantly. I post it within an hour, I'm gratified. You come to the workplace, you don't get instant gratification. It doesn't work that way. You start on the bottom of the totem pole. You're not so relevant on your first day of work either. So online, I'm relevant. I'm getting gratified. I'm getting all these emotional pats on the back. And I'm living in this world of fake gratification and instant relevancy. I only go to restaurants where I'm relevant. I only go to places where I can take an Instagram photograph and be important. I'm important. I'm relevant. Look where I am. Look what I'm doing. Look what I'm drinking. It's all about this relevancy thing. Excuse my animation. You got me going, buddy.
No, I love
it. It's all about this relevancy thing. So now they come to work. They're not as relevant, certainly as they are online. Yeah, mm-hmm. The gratification doesn't come right away. The promotions, the raises, those things, and they don't stay. So turnover becomes a real challenge. So getting them to come into the company, getting them to buy into the company, and the way we manage them has to change. I almost have to walk up to you every day, Jason, say, good to see you, buddy. Give you a pat on the back. I'm glad you're here. I got to give you relevancy every day. I got to make you feel important every day. I got to fill this daily void that didn't used to exist pre-fake gratification online. So I think it's an interesting dynamic. And some people might say, you're crazy, John, but this is what I see out there. Now, that challenges the way I hire, the way I keep people, the way I promote managers, the relationships that I have with employees. Now, let me couple that for you. In today's world, sure. I used to be a hugger. I used to be, if you were a great bartender for me, Jason, and I came to work, I'd say, how are you, buddy? How's the wife doing? Blah, blah, blah. Give you a little hug, right? It's the way I am. Female employees, same deal. It's the way I am. I've always felt that I could have a personal relationship with my employees. If they had a problem, they could come talk to me. I truly cared. And I found that I had the personality that they did come talk to me when they had issues. And I could help, whether it would be lending them money or advice or time. I would always be there for them. Today, I can't hug anybody. I could have a lawsuit on my hands. I can't ask people how their personal life is. That's a lawsuit today. So when you take the fact that relevancy is more important and instant gratification is more important, then put the fact that there are these barriers now to having a closer personal relationship with your employees. I'm not saying inappropriate. I'm saying closer personal relationship. Then these two things are working against each other. Because of the barrier of a relationship, they're not getting the gratification and the importance that they would have gotten years ago. I find that these things are slapping each other in the face, and we as operators are stuck in the middle. Has anybody ever elaborated in that way about those things to you before in that way?
Not quite like that. These are things that are floating around, and I think people are observing and feeling, but I think it's really helpful for you to just put them together and then literally smash them into each other, because what it shows is where so many leaders feel squished in the middle of it and unsure of what to do. Which, interestingly, John, I don't know, I'd love to know what guidance you have for folks who feel squished like that. But I would guess the starting point is, at the very least, look, it goes back to something we were just talking about in other versions, both for you and in the show, and then when we drew that line to managers, which is that whatever the situation is, whether you like it or not, the first thing to do is look at the situation and say, what is required of me? How do I have to adapt to this myself? Because we are all recognizing challenges, and you could stand around and bitch about those challenges until your business closes, but that's not going to get you anywhere. So instead, the question has to be, all right, this is what it is right now. This is the expectations that are surrounding me. So how do I adapt?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because those who adapt are the ones that are succeeding today. For example, years ago, when I used to look at human resource polls and stuff, I would find that if the employee really loved the person they were working for, really loved them, really felt gratified by working for them, felt they had a personal connection with them, I use the word general connectivity with that employee, suddenly the next raise didn't mean as much. The quality of life, working for somebody they liked coming through for every day, somebody who recognized it when they did come through for them every day. Payroll and things like that didn't mean as much. Now we've taken that connectivity away.
Yeah.
Employer and employees are not as close as they used to be. Now pay means more. Vacation time means more. I don't feel that way about the person that I work for anymore. Now, in a small company like mine, that's personality driven, I'd like to think my employees feel that way. They love me and have a relationship with me and make sacrifices to maintain that relationship just like I would. When that connectivity is gone, Jason, think of the dynamics that change. The commitment to standards isn't as great. The commitment to me as a manager enforcing standards isn't as great. I can't just discipline you all the time because I'm never doing positive stuff with you. You don't know me. We don't have that relationship where I can look at you and say, listen, buddy, I love you, but you got to clean. So it's really challenging today. So we have to find other ways to create connectivity. And we can't do it in the workplace like we used to. My company will do bowling parties. We'll do company dinners. We'll try to do things like that. And then we don't talk work, social environment. Spouses and partners are encouraged to come, and friends and kids and family. And we try to create connective exercises that don't blend with work.
Yeah.
And so connectivity needs to be an objective then, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it needs to be relevant in, or prevalent, I should say, in that manager's mind. How do I connect with my people so they want to work for me? And through that connection, I can grow them and correct them and better perform for the company. It's a challenge today.
Yeah. What you're saying fits very neatly inside of a framework that I have found incredibly useful, which is, it's a psychological theory that came in out of the 1980s, been incredibly influential in understanding human motivation. It's called self-determination theory. And it says that everyone needs three things three things, they have three basic psychological needs that they need in order to be happy and motivated. Those three things are autonomy. They need to feel like they're making decisions on their own. Two, to what you were just talking about, connectedness. They need to feel connected to the people that they're working with. And then three, competency. They need to feel good at what they do. And
Which is gratification, in a sense, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. I mean, the reason I bring this up is because it was just fascinating to hear you talk from a real management expertise perspective and see how well that maps on top of this psychological understanding of motivation.
So we're saying the same thing, just using different words.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what you're really guiding people towards here is understanding the basic needs of the people that work for them, and then making sure that you're creating environments that fulfill those needs.
Yeah. Years ago, I used to say, and I still say it, some people think it's a cold-hearted term. I don't think so at all. To me, the definition of management is the achieving of objectives through the manipulation of others. Now, manipulation's an ugly word. I could choose a better word. But if I said to myself, Jason's a great employee, I'm giving him a 20% raise and a promotion. One could say that was manipulative because I'm going to get more out of you. So I don't say manipulation in a bad way. It's looking at the employee and saying, okay, what can I do to motivate this employee? What can I do to get them to be better than they even think they could be?
Yeah.
How do I do that? Is it a kick in the butt? Is it more recognition? Is it a raise? Is it a challenge? What is it? I've looked at it that way for a long time. I'm a little older than you are, buddy. So I've seen a lot of changes over these years in these dynamics. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
You think that the employer-employee relationship wouldn't have changed as much, but it's a complete opposite of what it was in many ways just a few years ago.
John, because we're talking here at your 250th episode, how do you, as I think this is something that everyone grapples with when they've been doing something for a long time, how do you keep something interesting, not just for others, but for yourself as well? Anything can be repetitive. And what I have found in talking to incredibly accomplished people like you and people who are just running Main Street businesses is that it doesn't matter what you've built and it doesn't matter how amazing it is. If you've been doing it a long time, it can start to feel old. And you have to figure out a way to discover some newness to it, to discover something that pushes you in an unexpected way. And I'm curious, after doing 250 of these episodes, which take a lot of your time, how you are doing that for yourself.
Each one is fresh. And I don't know if I've ever told you this before. At the end of the episode, we do the hug. Yeah. And what people don't know is our microphones are under our shirts, on our chests, and nobody hears what's said when we hug each other. And it's some of the most powerful things people have ever said to me, Jason. You changed my life. I'm talking to my, oh, here was the best one. My wife and I slept in the same bed last night, first time in 9 years.
Oh my gosh.
I'm talking to my son again. You've given me hope, John. The things they say in my ear when I'm hugging them are just so freaking powerful that next week I'm just invigorated to go at the next person even more aggressively. That's how I got louder and louder. And I find the ones that fight me the hardest, Jason, are the ones that give me the biggest hugs. So I push and push and push. But in real life, you can't do that in a real workplace. In a real workplace, you have to inspire. Also, I find in the workplace and in Bar Rescue, keeping it fresh, I have a lot of people who've been with me for 12 years on Bar Rescue. Most of my crew has been with me a long time. I'm very proud of that, especially in TV. And it polices itself. Every year, we have to bring on some new people because people move on to other shows and things like that. If they're not right, I'm not even involved. The team will sort them out. The team will push them out. And they just don't have our DNA. You know what I'm saying? They're just not one of us.
Yeah.
So when you have a great team around you, it starts to become a little self-policing. Steve Jobs used to talk about that with Apple, when he would create these pirate teams, if you will, and he would let them self-police their own team members. And if the core of the team was strong, then the rest of the team tended to be pretty strong too.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is empowerment today. And I think one of the ways that you can create gratification and create relevancy is through empowerment. And through that empowerment, success and completion of things that you've been empowered, tasks or projects or whatever it might be, can feel really good when they're finished. So one of the approaches that we've taken in my company, and it's one of the ways we keep things fresh, is we always have a project or two around. brown butter is my last one. I think we sent you a bottle, didn't we? Did you enjoy it?
No, you did not send me a bottle, but well, I'd be happy to take
one. I'm sending you one now. So suddenly I'm in the bourbon business. I never thought I would be 2 years ago. How that started, by the way, is a good entrepreneur story. I'm in one of my restaurants and a cook is cooking some brown butter. Mm-hmm. And after 200 and some odd bar rescue episodes back then, I got to come up with new drinks every week. Not easy, Jason, after 1,000 of them.
No.
So I said, let me have that brown butter. I poured it in a cooking bag, filled it up with whiskey, sealed it, and boiled it for 4 hours. Mm. Took it out of the water, put it in a walk-in refrigerator. The butter coagulated on the top, skimmed it off the top, poured it through a coffee filter, believe it or not. And made a campfire. We named it cocktail out of it. We started selling 1,000 campfire cocktails a month in the restaurant. So we said, okay, we got to bottle it. So now here it is, Taffer's Brown Butter Bourbon. But I never woke up and said I wanted to be in the bourbon business. I never thought that I would ever own a bourbon or do. This is something that crossed me. And the key element to being an entrepreneur is to seize those moments. Yeah. I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs I've met in my career that talk to me about the deals they didn't do, the opportunities that they didn't have. And they think they're showing off to me when they said, oh, I could have done this or I could have done that. I wouldn't be proud of that. That's not a story I would tell very often. In other words, you blew it. You had the greatest opportunity. And you did. To me, I remember what my grandfather said. It was a very wealthy man. My grandfather invented direct mail in America, got credit for it. Died a very wealthy man. My grandfather said to me, John, if every deal you do is big enough, you only have to be right about 51 or 52% of the time. So don't be fearful of saying yes to something that maybe later on should be a no. But if you say no before it's a yes, the yes never happens. I've learned, and I'm pretty quick to do something, Jason. If I think I got a decent shot at it, I'm going to give it a whirl. I also have ridiculous tenacity. I stick with it. Until it's proven to me that it's not going to work. Too many entrepreneurs are surrounded by opportunity that isn't seized. How do you manage exposure, but yet still seize it? That's the challenge for an entrepreneur. How do I seize the opportunity around me and protect my resources so that I can?
Let me ask you the opposite of the thing that you just said so that you can take it and match it to the advice that you just gave.
Okay.
I was recently talking to a very accomplished tech entrepreneur named Naveen Jain. Maybe you know him. And Naveen told me this line, which I really love, which is he says, entrepreneurs don't die of starvation. They die of indigestion, by which he means that entrepreneurs want to do so many things. They take on so many projects that they stretch themselves too thin, and therefore things don't work. And he was telling me that he was giving me advice that he thought I needed to focus more because I take on so many things, which is true. But John, I would ask you, you were just, I think, very correctly advising to not turn away from great opportunities. But how do you know which are the ones to actually invest in? You must say no to so many things. You do a lot. You have a lot, but you must say no to so many. How do you make that distinction?
I don't say no to something that truly excites me. Mm. If it excites me from within, then I know I'll have the tenacity, the energy, the time, the inclination. If it makes financial sense, but it's not exciting to me, I got to really buy in. But when something excites me, I'm going to do it every time. Even if everybody around me says I'm crazy. Everybody said I was crazy when I was going to introduce a bourbon. We're doing really well, Jason, sir. I wasn't crazy. You know, everybody said I was crazy when I was going to do a TV show. Ron Hoffman, who's my publicist, was the publicist. Ron, come on the camera if you're there. Was the publicist for the nightclub and bar convention. This is
I didn't know that's how far back you guys go. I didn't know that.
So I was running the nightclub and bar convention. Ron was my publicist. We had a media room and all that. And I said to him, "Will you tell him the story very quickly, Ron, if you don't mind, Jason?"
Absolutely not. Welcome to the show, Ron.
You've been to these trade shows where you have these little cardboard walls and I had a little sofa in there and John Taffer, I'm meeting him for the first time. And when he comes in, and of course, John's a big presence and fills our little press room with his personality and everything. And as he's sitting there talking, we had talked many times doing interviews and setting all that up. It was the first time we were meeting face to face. And he sits down in this car. He says, Ron, I am going to do a TV show and I've got a pilot that I want you to see, and I think we're about to sell it. And I'm thinking, oh my God, here I am in Las Vegas. I work out of LA. Everybody's got a pilot. Everybody's got, and I come to Las Vegas in this trade show, and out of nowhere, this guy, another guy with a pilot.
Right. Can't escape it.
I can't escape this. And then he says, I'm going to send you the pilot linked so you can watch the pilot. And I'm thinking, oh God. And he kept asking me, have you watched it? And I thought, okay, I'm going to watch this. And literally 5 minutes into it, I thought, oh my God, this is like a really good show. I think this is going to really be a good. And so it was this miraculous kind of thing that I actually pursued. After that, anytime anybody tells me they have a pilot, I take them seriously. And I don't just I don't just roll my eyes.
But Jason, there's something about that connects back to what you and I were saying about branding.
Yeah.
Ron has been with me for 15 years. He knows my brand. Mm-hmm. I don't do business with people that don't understand fully the brand. The idiosyncrasies of the brand, what the brand does, what it doesn't do, all of those elements. One of the greatest parts of brand building or company building is knowing who's a lifer with you, who stays with you long term. Ron and I have been working together now almost 15 years. I don't think there's anybody who knows my brand better than him. Mm-hmm. So when you surround yourself with people who are very brand knowledgeable, it's a lot easier to build a brand.
Yeah.
John, thank you, Ron.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. John, I'll just share one final observation and then let you go, which is to tie actually just three things that we were just talking about together and just get your opinion on it, which is this. I had asked you, how do you keep it fresh for yourself after 250 episodes? Your answer was the impact that you make personally with the person that you're working with.
Can I answer it another way?
Sure. Although I have a whole theory to lay out to you, but yeah, tell me. Yeah.
Each week when I look in their eyes, mm-hmm. it's all new again. Mm-hmm. You with me? It's all new yes. again.
Yeah.
Just as a consultant, I could do 50 bars a year, but everyone was different. So bar rescue that. Isn't yeah. a challenge in that way, believe it or not, because yeah. when I look in each person's eyes, the differences are sustained.
So that's number one there. Identifying what is driving you to keep that fresh for yourself for 250 episodes. Then we were talking about how to identify the right opportunities. You have a lot. There are probably opportunities every day in front of you. You say no to most of them. Which are the ones that you keep going? And the answer was that you understand deep down the things that are going to excite you and therefore that you're going to commit to. And then number three, with Ron, we're talking about great partnerships and great teams. And the thing that you said is you want people who understand the core of your business, who understand all the nuances of your business. Each of those answers, this is the thing I want to put to you, each of those answers is really about complex systems and complex decisions require a clear understanding of their focused power center. You have to know what is the thing at its core that makes this work. And if you understand that, then everything else can flow from it. And if you don't, then you're lost. That was really, you gave in a really interesting way, the same version of that yeah. insight in these three totally different ways. What do you think of that?
I think that's astute. And I think that's very correct. I find that for myself, if I don't have something new every 6 months or something, I get bored. Mm-hmm. I'm not the kind of guy to put the key in the door and open the same place every day. That's not yeah. who I am. But yeah, I think that's extremely astute. I do.
John. It is always a pleasure talking with you. I am so glad we were able to spend time today.
I love you, buddy.
And that's our episode. I would love to hear what you think and maybe even about a problem that you solved. You can find me at my website, jasonfeifer.com. JasonFeifer.com. Also, I have some more useful stuff for you. I write a newsletter about how to future-proof yourself and become more adaptable and optimistic. I would love for you to sign up. It is at jasonfeifer.bulletin.com. Also, check out my other podcast. It's called Build for Tomorrow. In each episode, I take on some belief that we have that holds us back from progress and show you why it is not as bad as you think. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media and comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Thanks to Deepa Shah for production. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.